Good morning, all. This is Pastor David, Berean Baptist Church. News and focus this morning. It is Thursday, June 11th, 10:50 a.m. And I came across this the other day. Russell D. Moore of the Southern Baptist Convention had tweeted it out, and he usually has some really interesting stuff, articles, different things, quotes, commentaries, different things that he does that I really enjoy. And he tweeted out this article from the Witherspoon Institute Public Discourse. And this is written by a guy named Paul McHugh. And Paul McHugh is a doctor. He is a professor. He is the University Distinguished Service Professor of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins Medical School, and the former psychiatrist in chief at Johns Hopkins Hospital. Right? So it's one of those articles that I think speaks for itself. And so what I'm going to do is probably keep the commentary to a minimum and let Dr. McHugh give us his very logical position on this. And the subject of the article is transgenderism, so it's another piece that kind of catapults off of the whole Bruce Jenner thing that we talked about last week. And he, as a psychiatrist, not as a Christian, not as a biblicist, but as a psychiatrist, as a medical doctor, he has a very logical perspective on the destructive nature of this whole transgender movement that seems to be taking over every media outlet we can find. And the title of the article is "Transgenderism: A Pathogenic Meme." Well, some of you may turn off the recording right now. Pathogenic meme. Well, if you break down that word, pathogenic is anything that causes a disease. A pathogen is something that makes you sick. So a pathogenic meme. A meme is an idea. It's a belief. It's a system that pervades throughout culture and society. So transgenderism, a pathogenic meme, means transgenderism, a disease-causing idea, a sickening idea. All right, so this was written June 10th, 2015, and again, I'm going to let Dr. McHugh kind of take over here, and I will be his mouthpiece as I speak his words. He says, "The idea that one sex is a feeling, not a fact, has permeated our culture and is leaving casualties in its wake. Gender dysphoria, that is the idea of being born biologically one thing and identifying as the opposite gender, should be treated with psychotherapy, not surgery." For 40 years as the University Distinguished Service Professor of Psychiatry at Johns Hopkins Medical School, 26 of which were also spent as psychiatrist-in-chief of Johns Hopkins Hospital, I've been studying people who claim to be transgender. Over that time, I've watched the phenomenon change and expand in remarkable ways. A rare issue of a few men, both homosexual and heterosexual men, including some who sought sex change surgery because they were erotically aroused by the thought or image of themselves as women, has spread to include women as well as men. Even young boys and girls have begun to present themselves as of the opposite sex. Over the last 10 or 15 years, this phenomenon has increased in prevalence, seemingly exponentially. Now almost everyone has heard of or met such a person. Publicity, especially from early examples such as, quote, Christine Jorgensen, quote, Jan Morris, and, quote, Renee Richards, has promoted the idea that one's biological sex is a choice, leading to widespread cultural acceptance of the concept. And that idea, quickly accepted in the 1980s, has since run through the American public like a revelation or meme affecting much of our thought about sex. The champions of this meme, encouraged by their alliance with the broader LGBT movement, claim that whether you are a man or a woman, a boy or a girl, is more of a disposition or a feeling about yourself than a fact of nature. And much like any other feeling, it can change at any time and for all sorts of reasons. Therefore, no one could predict who would swap this fact of their makeup, nor could one justifiably criticize such a decision. Now let me stop and interject a little bit of commentary here. But I saw a very interesting tweet last week, and it was talking about these new liberal progressive ideas, including transgenderism. And he said, let me get this straight. In this thought process, biological sex is mutable, but sexual orientation is immutable. Do you see where their logic's running into problems? So the fact that I'm a boy or a girl That can change, but the fact that I'm gay or what they would say straight cannot change? Very interesting. At Johns Hopkins, after pioneering sex change surgery, we demonstrated that the practice brought no important benefits. As a result, we stopped offering that form of treatment in the 1970s. Our efforts, though, had little influence on the emergence of this new idea about sex or upon the expansion of the number of transgendered among young and old. So I would ask the question, what kind of doctor would perform such a surgery? Olympic athlete turned pinup girl. This history may clarify some aspects of the latest high-profile transgender claimant. Bruce Jenner, the 1976 Olympic decathlon champion, is turning away from his titular identity as one of the world's greatest male athletes. Jenner announced recently that he identifies as a woman, and with medical and surgical help, is busy reconstructing his physique. I have not met or examined Jenner, but his behavior resembles that of some of the transgender males we have studied over the years. These men wanted to display themselves in sexy ways, wearing provocative female garb. And if you saw Bruce Jenner's Vanity Fair cover, you see what he's talking about. More often than not, while claiming to be a woman in a man's body, they declare themselves to be quote-unquote lesbians, attracted to other women. The photograph of the posed, corseted, breast-boosted Bruce Jenner, a man in his mid-60s, but flaunting himself as if a pinup girl in her 20s or 30s on the cover of Vanity Fair, suggests that he may fit the behavioral mold that Ray Blanchard has dubbed an expression of autogynephilia, from gynephilia, attracted to women, and auto in the form of oneself. So he is attracted to the idea of himself as a female. Sounds awful psychological. The Emperor's New Clothes. But the meme that your sex is a feeling, not a biological fact, and can change at any time, marches on through our society. In a way, it's reminiscent of the Hans Christian Andersen tale, The Emperor's New Clothes. In that tale, the emperor, believing that he wore an outfit of special beauty imperceptible to the rude or uncultured, paraded naked through his town to the huzzas of courtiers and citizens anxious about their reputations. Many onlookers to the contemporary transgender parade, knowing that a disfavored opinion is worse than bad taste today, similarly fear to identify it as a misapprehension. In other words, they see that it's clearly wrong, but because that would be a threat that they may be attacked, persecuted, discredited, they will not speak. I am ever trying to be the boy among the bystanders who points to what's real. I do so not only because truth matters, but also because overlooked amid the hoopla, enhanced now by Bruce Jenner's celebrity and Annie Leibovitz's photography, stand many victims. Think, for example, of the parents whom no one, not doctors, schools, nor even churches, will help to rescue their children from these strange notions of being transgendered and the problematic lives those notions herald. These youngsters now far outnumber the Bruce Jenner type of transgender. Although they may be encouraged by his public reception, these children generally come to their ideas about their sex not through erotic interests, but through a variety of youthful psychosocial conflicts and concerns. First, though, let us address the basic assumption of the contemporary parade, the idea that exchange of one's sex is possible. It, like the storied emperor, is starkly, nakedly false. Transgendered men do not become women, nor do transgendered women become men. All, including Bruce Jenner, become feminized men or masculinized women, counterfeits or impersonators of the sex with which they identify, quote-unquote. In that lies their problematic future. When the tumult and shouting dies, it proves not easy nor wise to live in a counterfeit sexual garb. The most thorough follow-up of sex reassigned people, extending over 30 years and conducted in Sweden, where the culture is strongly supportive of the transgendered, documents their lifelong mental unrest. 10 to 15 years after surgical reassignment, the suicide rate of those who had undergone sex reassignment surgery rose to 20 times that of comparable peers. You are 20 times more likely to commit suicide if you choose this path. How to treat gender dysphoria. So how should we make sense of this matter today? As with any mental phenomenon, what's crucial is noting its fundamental characteristic and then identifying the many ways in which that characteristic can manifest itself. The central issue with all transgender subjects is one of assumption. The assumption that one's sexual nature is misaligned with one's biological sex. This problematic assumption comes about in several different ways, and these distinctions in this generation determine how to manage and treat it. Based on photographic evidence, one might guess Bruce Jenner falls into the group of men who come to their disordered assumption through being sexually aroused by the image of themselves as women. He could have been treated for this misaligned arousal with psychotherapy and medication. Instead, he found his way to surgeons, who worked him over as he wished. Others have already commented on his stereotypic caricature of women as decorative, quote-unquote, babes. I look forward to wearing nail polish until it chips off, he said to Diane Sawyer, a view that understandably infuriates feminists, and his odd sense that only feelings, not facts, matter here. For his sake, however, I do hope that he receives regular, attentive follow-up care, as his psychological serenity in the future is doubtful. Future men with similar feelings and intentions should be treated for those feelings rather than being encouraged to undergo bodily changes. Group therapies are now available for them. Most young boys and girls who come seeking sex reassignment are utterly different from Jenner. They have no erotic interest driving their quest. Rather, they come with psychosocial issues, conflicts over the prospects, expectations, and roles that they sense are attached to their given sex, and presume that sex reassignment will ease or resolve them. The grim fact is that most of these youngsters do not find therapists willing to assess and guide them in ways that permit them to work out their conflicts and correct their assumptions. Rather, they and their families find only gender counselors, quote-unquote, who encourage them in their sexual misassumptions. Those with gender dysphoria need evidence-based care. There are several reasons for this absence of coherence in our mental health system. Important among them is the fact that both the state and federal governments are actively seeking to block any treatments that can be construed as challenging the assumptions and choices of transgendered youngsters. As part of our dedication to protecting America's youth, this administration supports efforts to ban the use of conversion therapy for minors, said Valerie Jarrett, a senior advisor to President Obama. In two states, a doctor who would look into the psychological history of a transgender boy or girl in search of a resolvable conflict could lose his or her license to practice medicine. By contrast, such a physician would not be penalized if he or she started such a patient on hormones that would block puberty and might stunt growth. I mean, listen to that disturbing thing. In two states, if a doctor looked at somebody's psychological history and discovered that they had been sexually abused, that they had been abandoned, that they had been raped, that they had been molested, whatever it is, he could lose his job. But if he just went ahead and prescribed hormone blockers and hormone enhancers that could stunt growth and change somebody's hormonal output, he is praised for that. That's where we are. Don't look into the past, because you might find something that actually shows why they're acting the way they do. What is needed now is public clamor for coherent science, biological and therapeutic science, examining the real effects of these efforts to support transgendering. Although much is made of a rare intersex individual, no evidence supports the claim that people such as Bruce Jenner have a biological source for their transgender assumptions. Plenty of evidence demonstrates that with him and most others, transgendering is a psychological rather than a biological matter. Now, of course, he's referencing this idea of people. You'll see this if you ever go on a message board or comments or anything like that. They'll say, well, what about people that are born with multiple sets of sex organs? Because there is a birth defect, quite rare, but happens where there are evidence of maybe both sexual organs. And in that case, usually something is, one or the other is chosen, I don't really know how that all works, but it's the same argument when people talk from the abortion perspective and they say, well, what about rape and incest? Well, the thing is, they don't really care about rape and incest. It's such a small percentage that that's really not their interest. They're just using that as kind of the straw man representation to try to take down an argument and presenting a difficult situation. The same idea here, they'll say, well, what about somebody that's born with these defects? Well, in this case, what he's saying is nobody is saying that this is a biological thing for Bruce Jenner or anybody else. They're saying they feel a certain way, and so they should be themselves. Okay? Let's see. In fact, gender dysphoria, the official psychiatric term for feeling oneself to be of the opposite sex, belongs in the family of similarly disordered assumptions about the body, and I think this is good, such as anorexia nervosa and body dysmorphic disorder. Its treatment should not be directed at the body as with surgery and hormones any more than one treats obesity-fearing anorexic patients with liposuction. The treatment should strive to correct the false problematic nature of the assumption and to resolve the psychosocial conflicts provoking it. With youngsters, this is best done in family therapy. Okay? We're talking about somebody who has an inaccurate view of their body, like an anorexic, like somebody that has this body dysmorphic disorder, this idea that they, what they really are is not what they see in the mirror. They have this psychological idea. Nobody says, you know, an anorexic that's 85 pounds and says, I'm still too fat. You don't send them to the doctor to get liposuction. You don't send them to the doctor to get plastic surgery to get thinner, because that would be destructive to the body. He says it's the same thing here. This psychosocial transgenderism thing should not be corrected with surgery. All that's going to do is create more and more problems and be a destructive thing for the individual and for those around them. Could you imagine dealing with somebody, a mother or a father, that suddenly wants to be the opposite gender? Let's see. The larger issue is the meme itself. The idea that one sex is fluid and a matter open to choice runs unquestioned through our culture and is reflected everywhere in the media, the theater, the classroom, and in many medical clinics. It has taken on cult-like features, its own special lingo, internet chat rooms providing slick answers to new recruits, and clubs for easy access to dresses and styles supporting the sex change. It is doing much damage to families, adolescents, and children, and should be confronted as an opinion without biological foundation wherever it emerges. But gird your loins if you would confront this matter. Hell hath no fury like a vested interest masquerading as a moral principle. Hell hath no fury like a vested interest masquerading as a moral principle. Excellent. Well said. And so here we are in a situation where where for all these years, this the transgenderism is kind of, not that it hasn't existed, but it hasn't been that upfront issue. And the lesbian and gay and bisexual community has been shouting from the mountaintops that this is an unchangeable thing. I was born this way and I can't help the way that I feel. And now we've got a transgender movement that wants to go alongside that says this is all about how I feel. There's no biological idea. Obviously, we can't trace any biological ideas on either one of them. And now you go with your feelings. It's very interesting how these new things come up that seem to contradict other things. And as we said in another article, it is totally in opposition to the feminist idea by creating this male and female idea. So it's really interesting. Going to be interesting to see how the progressives and the liberals deal with that, those contradictions to their worldviews. But here is a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, a psychologist that knows and has studied and was in Johns Hopkins, who pioneered sex reassignment surgery in the 70s, and they figured out, this is awful. We're doing terrible things to these people. It is not a good thing for them to have these surgeries done, and we are going to discontinue them because we're seeing the suicides, we're seeing the depression, we're seeing the unrest that goes into that, and we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that to people anymore. And now, and, you know, we're talking Johns Hopkins. That's where Ben Carson was. We're talking about a reputable medical facility. And now we've got all your celebrity doctors out there in Beverly Hills, probably, that are willing to do this surgery anytime they want, probably because they see the dollar signs and they see the notoriety and how they can make a buck in this fallen world. So I would think we would do good as a world to listen to Dr. McHugh and stop just accepting the cultural meme of transgenderism is natural, normal, and healthy, and really view it for what it is, which is destructive to both society and to the individual and to families and to teenagers and to younger people. It's what will not be addressed in the mainstream media. And it's what, if you want to address it, you'll probably be shouted down as a bigot. But from a biblical perspective, we know that God created them man and male and female. We know that's what happened. We know we've got been created in the image of God, and we've been given gender roles. And the thing is that doesn't even have to come into the conversation to take this argument apart. You know, it's one thing to quote scripture to another believer or somebody that's interested in what scripture is. For somebody that doesn't believe in the book that you're quoting from, every now and then you have to go to science, and science supports the Bible once again, like it does so many other times. So just wanted to make you aware of that. I thought it was a really well-written article. I thought it was powerful and gave us kind of a last word on this whole ridiculous Bruce Jenner situation, which we haven't heard the last of, as the reality show is coming and more news coverage is coming. Pray for Bruce Jenner. Pray for those that would struggle with this psychological disorder. And on top of the therapies that Dr. McHugh mentions, the saving power of the gospel is probably even more effective than that. If you have any comments, please post them directly to this podcast. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.